My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
So, welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. And this week it was my turn to pick, and I, for somewhat baffling reasons, made everyone else read a Warhammer 40K novel called Krieg by Steve Lyons, which was released in 2022. In fact, I don't think it's actually come out in print yet. You can get an ebook of it or an audiobook, but they haven't like actually made a physical copy of it. I selected this. Well, we'd been talking about trying to do a novel for a while. We were thinking about maybe doing Hyperion, but I figured if we were going to try that, we should first like pick something like lighter and sillier to talk about. And I love the Death Corp Krieg, who are the main like protagonists in this. So I thought, you know, this would be like a kind of funny to talk about 40K novel. You know, it's got the, or I figured it would have the standard 40K thing of like taking itself seriously while also somehow being in on the joke and just being fun to talk about. I'd never read it before or anything, but you know, Death Corps or Krieg are kind of hard to take seriously. And so we went through this and let's go around the horn. And would you recommend this book? Ronald, why don't you go first?
Sure. You know, I think I dislike this more than anyone else here. So I would give it a not recommend. It wasn't my favorite. I didn't really like the format of the story. I didn't really like the cut. I think it's always kind of a, I think it's always really kind of hacky when they have two stories and they cut between them to kind of build tension like they did in this. And the two stories were like barely related. So all the characters in this, and this is kind of true in Warhammer in general, all the characters are the same. You know, they all have the same motivations and the same kind of character traits.
Well, no, you've got your good guy and your bad guy, and they're the same. Oh, and then you've also got your orc, who is the same.
The orcs aren't really characters though. They're more like set pieces.
You take that back. They have rich inner lives.
In this story, they're not characters.
No. That's a joke. They don't have rich inner lives anywhere. They're motivated primarily by their love of crumping and getting stuck in. And it's not like they've got like they're thinking about their place in the universe.
Yeah, I'm motivated by those two things as well.
I mean, yeah. I think the orcs only have like maybe one line in this whole book.
It is literally them shouting "wah."
Yeah. So, you know, I wanted to see more orc. I wanted to see more like crazy alien. I would have loved to see some Tyranids in this. It's mostly just the Marines talking about how grim war is and people making hard decisions that are, you know, for some reason really respected in the universe, but are really fucking stupid. And I don't know. I wasn't super into this one. So that's my recommendation.
Rahul, what did you think of it?
So I came into this right off of Hell's Reach, so I give this a decent, like a soft recommend. I didn't think it was that good. I don't really, in general, care for the whole archetype of like people who throw their own lives away.
You're gonna hate the Krieg
for something. You know, like I don't know. I mean, like, I enjoy it, but I don't, like, love it, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like, I feel like there needs to be more, like, a more direction. I don't know. I guess I like the idea of giving your life up for, like, something that I can understand instead of, like, the Emperor. I don't know. I know that's ridiculous coming from a Warhammer book. So I give it a soft recommend.
I guess if you don't like it,
it's like hard for me to like
critiquing a Warhammer book because people in it like the Emperor too much. You're just never gonna like a Warhammer book.
But in my defense, if you read Hell's Reach, it's a lot more nuanced in their love of the Emperor.
That's fair, but I mean, the main character of Hell's Reach, Grimaldus, does worship the Emperor as a god, and his belief in the Emperor is his main thing.
But the coolest characters in Hell's Reach are the Mechanicus.
Oh yeah, Zara, who doesn't even
and they're like, I don't give a shit about the Emperor, really. Like, so cool.
Yeah,
Just love, like, godlike super weapons, and, you know, I don't give a shit about anything. Everything I said was bullshit. Really, that's all I care about, is, like, godlike super weapons that are, like totally misunderstood and like almost heretical and like buried and come from the past. I love that shit.
So there was
this book didn't really give that to me.
Well, I think that there was one chapter you might have liked then.
In this book?
Yeah.
Well, it was where they discovered the nukes underground.
Yeah, exactly. But nukes aren't that exciting anymore, you know?
These ones were super nukes, man.
They were super nukes.
Big nukes.
Yeah.
Poison nukes, maybe.
Yeah, when they discovered the nukes, I was like, nukes?
I was hoping for a giant robot.
I really was.
Okay, how's this? The Orc Stompa is just their version of one of the things that Zara was driving.
Yeah, no, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Anyways, the Orc Stompa was like the coolest thing that we see. Oh yeah, well, Lawrence, do your recommendation, and then we'll talk about hype points.
Oh, and also, so we're gonna I had a whole thing written up. Trying of explaining Warhammer 40K, and then we thought it would be funnier if the reader just didn't hear it. So they're just like, wait, you're saying it's Warhammer 40K, it appears to be in the future, but there's orcs running around, what the fuck? But if you check the show notes, there is going to be a little summary of like sort of what Warhammer is. And you can also just check the internet, which is full of that shit. So anyways, so what happened in this book, as I said, I picked it because I thought it was going to be like hilariously grim and over the top and like just a really like good example of like the whoa, that's fucked up but awesome, that is like the main thing that Warhammer 40K is made out of, you know. But then this completely unexpected thing happened about like I think in the last two chapters of the book. It started sort of, I don't know if it was the author's worldview, but the book definitely has a kind, or the characters in the book, a lot of them have this kind of simpatico view of like what your the point of your life is and what a good death is, that like completely aligns with mine. So I ended up loving this book for reasons of basically just like my weird worldview, and it's are kind of the same thing, which is kind of absurd because I mean it's a book about like weird guys in Death's Head gas masks fighting orcs in space. So having this like strong emotional reaction to the philosophy it's espousing is stupid. But that is still the thing I did, so good for me, I guess. So, if you like me, long for a death that like saves or helps other people and has a purpose, like just a glorious, useful death, and think that the main reason you exist is to sacrifice yourself on behalf of others, and also you really like seeing orcs get stabbed in the dick with bayonets, read Creed, because that's what it is, baby.
I can't argue with that.
Yeah. But it is in terms of like actual quality of writing, this is a pretty workmanlike novel. I thought the split perspectives were kind of more interesting than and didn't piss me off. It's a little more formally invented than you see in like this kind of licensed fiction, I think. And I thought the characterization was mostly non-existent except for like one dude. But still, you know, it's if you go into it just expecting like a sort of pretty good Warhammer novel, you won't have a bad time. And if you've got a busted brain that's like, hey, you should go like try to give other people your organs and die in the process, you'll love this shit. Anyways.
So what happens when you're driving down the street, Lawrence, and you see a truck in front of you, and on the back of that truck is a giant skull decal? Are you like super into that?
Well, it depends on how sick the skull is. Like, the Punisher skull, no. But if it's just a normal skull, probably, yeah. Because, I mean, the
great... Like, oh my god, it's so beautiful.
What if it's a corn skull?
Oh, that's really cool. Corn what rules, dude.
Corn skull? Oh, corn. I thought you meant, like, C-O-R-N for a second.
Well, if it's a corn skull, like, the children of the corn might use to worship he who walks behind the rose. Hell yeah, bro.
Nice.
I love that dude. I liked it how that Jesus for once isn't a pussy and he's got like teeth and shit and like will bite you.
Yeah.
Better Jesus they got.
I appreciate a savior that like, you know, knows how to fucking slit some throats.
Hey, yeah. Jesus Revision 1 also had teeth. It must be said.
Well, sharp teeth, you know.
Yeah.
He's going to bite
incisors.
You. Nah. I'm talking like just rows of razor sharp teeth like a shark might have.
They grow back if you pull one out.
Well, obviously, he's Jesus. Okay. And that's one of his miracles. The miracle of infinite teeth with which to pierce your flesh, heretic.
He gets it from the tooth fairy.
Anyways, so I'm going to go ahead and do the summary since I'm the one who cared most about this novel. Although, okay, how's this? I'm going to do the summary because the other two don't give a shit. And I might... legit get upset if
I think Rahul wants to do it. So here's what I propose.
Okay? Yeah.
You do one of the two plot summaries and Rahul does the other one.
Rahul.
No, I don't want to.
You should do it.
No, Matt, I think you take over the whole thing.
I think Lauren should do the pre.
Yeah, let me do Yurtin, and then you do the post one, and then we'll see how angry you can make me.
The post one
is pretty fucking stupid, anyways, and I kind of want to hear Rahul's interpretation of what happened.
I read this book like weeks ago.
Too bad, dude.
Too bad. Veto. Yeah. You got to do it.
I can't believe you convinced Lawrence to.
Well, because he's still doing the important part.
He immediately is just like, veto. Like, if you see our chat, he was like, can I please?
Yeah, can I do this? I think I'm legit going to cry talking about this novel. It meant so much to me. And then when we get on air, it's like, no. Sentiment is weakness.
Yeah. And like, let's be real. I want to hear what Rahul thought happened in the book.
Yeah, and I can always step in and like, you know, fix it after you fuck up.
It's always funny when we do these revisions or when we do an episode and we hear Rahul's summary of it. And I just think, and it's always funny to me when I hear something and it's like, oh, that never happened. That's pretty far from what I thought happened.
And his accent work. I mean, there's going to be a lot of like Germans in here. Can Rahul do a German accent?
I bet they'll all be Australian.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm from Korea, Lawrence. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking 5 minutes for the whole thing. So 3 for me, 2 for Rahul.
That sounds good.
Okay. 3 minutes on the clock.
3 minutes on the clock, sir.
Give me a countdown and then everyone else mute.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
So we open on the Imperium is making contact with the world of Krieg, which has sent out a signal saying that they have won their civil war after 500 years and are ready to rejoin the Empire. The Imperium thinks that they're probably all dead and suck, but sends out a ship anyways and are amazed to discover that Krieg is willing to field them 30 regiments instead of the one they thought they might have. And they insist on being deployed to the strong or the most deadly military zones in the galaxy. And everyone's like, oh, this is awesome, except for one Inquisitor on board who's like, hey, why aren't you guys taking off your masks? Are you secretly mutants or heretics? And so then we cut back a Krieg colonel named Yurtin. This is before whatever happened on Krieg has happened, is being interrogated by the Inquisition because he has sent out a lot of messages saying, hey, I'm pretty sure Krieg is going to leave the Imperium. I don't want that heresy. Can you guys stop it? And they're like, well, maybe you're the heretic. But after they torture him a bunch, they're like, now you love the Emperor. You're not a heretic. So why don't you go back to Krieg and see if you can stop them from rebelling? He goes back. He's not welcomed with open arms, but they do let him on the planet. He encounters his daughter, who he abandoned in the womb so that he could go off and kill the Emperor's enemies among the stars. She is high up in the Krieg Defense Force. He also encounters the Autocrat, who is never named for reasons I'll talk about later that I thought were interesting, who is the chairman, who's the ruler of Krieg. He ends up in a hive called Farograd, and the ruler of Krieg, the chairman, does indeed declare that they are independent of the Empire and give everyone who is still an Imperial citizen 24 hours to leave the planet. Yurtin says, fuck that, calls everyone a traitor, seizes control of Hive Farograd, and begins to wage a war against the rest of the planet. It doesn't go very well because it's one city against a planet. His daughter defects to join him, and then as the war will grind on, she volunteers for essentially a suicide mission to go kill the chairman of the planet, which ends in her death, but Yurtin is still very proud of her for sacrificing herself. And then the rest of the novel is the Kriegers slowly losing the war, the loyalists slowly losing the war because, again, they're one dude against a planet, while Yurtin makes more and more sacrifices of his principles for the expediency of the war, first by letting deserters from the other side who had betrayed the Emperor serve in his army, even though he hates them, later by getting a cybernetic hip joint installed. He'll have more cybernetics installed as the story progresses. And he has an adjutant named Greel, who is an Archmagos of the Adeptus Mechanicus, who is with him because underneath High Farograd is a vault containing essentially super nukes from the Dark Age of Technology. And Yurtin swears never to use them because they are forbidden heresy. But then as it becomes clear that there is no way in hell he is going to fucking win this war, he goes sort of crazier and crazier, is like just the grinding sacrifices he's made wear on him. until eventually he decides, fuck it, and launches all of the nukes, killing basically everyone on the planet except for his city, because he has built a kind of network of bunkers as just like a protective measure, because more and more of the city got bombed to the point where they have like entire factories underground. This actually isn't enough to win the war. It does totally collapse Krieg's ecosystem and kill billions or maybe even trillions of people, but it doesn't quite win the war. But it does kick off the next 500 years of grinding combat where the loyalist Kriegers will eventually take their planet back. Let me just finish real quick.
Yep.
At the very end, as Yurtin is about to die, Arkmajos Creel comes to him one last time and says, hey, you're still not going to win the war because your guys, there's just still not enough of you. So I need you to do something involving these Vidie wombs that will increase your birth rate and stop you from being mutants to the point where you can like have, you can win this war. And Yurtin, with his dying breath and like bitter that he has to make one last fucking sacrifice, approves it. And that's the thing that lets them win the war and rejoin the Imperium. And it exemplifies the brutal, pragmatic sacrifice that the Kriegers bring to everything they do. And that's it.
Nice.
Very good.
Okay, wait. One clarification
before
I forget. I kind of read that differently, that before Yurtin died, he said, no, we're not doing it. And then after he died, Greel just was like, yeah, I was with him in his last moments, and he said to do it.
Yeah, we don't actually find that out either way. I sort of just assumed he said yes, because the thing Greel has him say at the end of no more sacrifices was such a Yurtin line, and I don't think Greel would have bothered. I think Greel would have made up a more expedient lie of like have him say for the Empire or something, but I could see that going either way, definitely.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I read that correctly.
Yeah, it's right. Ambiguous. Greel just comes in later and he's like, he approved these Vidie wombs. Shut the fuck up, nerds. Let's win this war. Of course, Greel is the ultimate nerd, so he wouldn't say, shut the fuck up, nerds, because then he couldn't talk.
Rahul, you ready to do yours?
Yep.
Can you do it in 2 minutes, or do you want three?
Let's do two.
All right.
Okay, mutant, and don't worry too much on this dude. If you, like, shit it up too much, I'll step in and pick up the pieces, but probably you'll do fine.
Well, don't step in until after he's done.
Well, obviously, yeah. Okay. He gets 2 minutes to do whatever the fuck he wants, and then we got to deal with it.
Exactly. Ready?
All right. Yeah, I'm ready.
3, 2, 1, go.
All right. There's a planet under siege by the orcs, and they're losing badly. And then, for some reason, Yurtin and the boys are called in. And that's actually his name. Lawrence was saying it's wrong, but it's Yurtin. So Yurtin pops down, and all the dudes don't like him because his dudes are all fucking weird. But they immediately start digging trenches. Oh, and let me mention that the orcs have landed in, are taking over a hive, which is like this gigantic mega city. So that's the orcs' base of operations now. And Yurtin and the boys, there's this long grinding siege with all this trench warfare and shit, and they're slowly trying to make progress. Yurtin and the boys do a mega offensive, and they all mostly die. It doesn't really work. And then they discover, or I don't exactly remember how, but that there's like some sort of forbidden super weapon underneath the orc hive. Now the orc hive. So they hit up Elon Musk and they're like, yo, get us that boring drill. And they drill down there and they open up the bank vault and there are these nukes down there. So they leave one dude behind. Because they don't want the orcs to find the nukes, because God knows what they'll do. Probably like lick them and shit. And then they eventually decide to use the nukes and they nuke the hive. And that's it. End of story.
Oh, okay.
Still 20 seconds.
Yeah, do what you want for 20 seconds.
Well, Jurton's like, yeah, man, that was fucking easy, yo. And all the orcs are all fucking incinerated and Yurtin and Greel start making out. I'm like, bro, this went way off the rails. Like, this is not a 40K book anymore. It's just like a fanfic. Now I see why Lawrence likes it so much.
Now, I want to say that Rahul is incorrect and Colonel Yurtin does not return from the dead 10,000 years in the future to fight the orcs. It's a different Colonel.
Well, which, but his name is also Yurtin.
It is Yurtin, though.
Wait, is the... Wait,
that's the, that's the final reveal is like the thing that he says at the start is that, like, my name is Yurtin.
Yeah, but that's that colonel who like introduces them back into it, the Imperium, is a different dude from the colonel who's in charge of the Creed forces. Yeah,
whatever.
I think from what I understood is that the colonel name is just Yurtin. Like, anyone who's the colonel is Yurtin.
This is a weird thing. The Creed don't actually have names.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So I think that like anyone who is the colonel is Yurtin. That's what I'm saying.
I thought Greel made him immortal.
He definitely died.
Yeah, I think that the guy in the first chapter might have been a clone or one of his kids, one of the two. It's hard to know. But anyways.
I personally think that it's just like they don't have the concept of names. So when he asked them like, hey, colonel, what's your name? He's like, I guess I'm Yurtin.
Fair enough. That's a hell of a thing. So there is a...
Jerking off, whatever his name is.
Yeah, hilarious. There is a subplot that Rahul sort... Well, never mind. We'll talk about it later.
Just go into it now.
Okay, so thing? Well, there's a couple of things going on. The first is that the guy going into the vault is a witch hunter... who, after the Krieg have like saved the city by sacrificing themselves and doing something forbidden yet again, attaches himself to the Krieg and spends the next like 10 or 20 years of his life before he dies of old age, essentially protecting them from the Inquisition, because the Inquisition is apparently sort of starting to think that they might be heretics again, maybe. And the last lines in the present of the book are him recording a statement saying that they should not investigate the Krieg, because whatever they are loyal to the Emperor, and the thing that they are atoning for, they've never really explained it, but it might be that the fact that their ancestors rebelled, but it could also be like Yurtin's sin or the way that they're created. And in any case, they're so useful that the Imperium needs them, and investigating them would serve no purpose. And then he articulates the idea, which I found kind of powerful, that maybe if you do something evil, but the good that results like over the years is like strong enough, you can like, it can kind of cancel it out and you can be saved from damnation, which, you know, could lead to some horrible stuff, but also it's kind of a hopeful idea, maybe. I don't know. Anyways. But yeah. Oh, and then there's also this inquisitor who's this interrogator who's an absolute asshole and just keeps wandering around accusing the Krieg of heresy with no evidence, and being like, nah, everyone says you're not mutants, but I'm pretty sure you're fucking mutants. And he...
Well, he's an inquisitor. That's his job.
Yeah.
Are we talking about the inquisitor's
there's an junior? Interrogator Farron, yeah. And yeah, at one point
I thought he's not a full inquisitor yet.
Yeah, no, he's part of the retinue, but he's going to become inquisitor, but he isn't
planning
yet.
On it. Yeah, that's his career progression, but he's not there.
Yeah, he's just wandering around being a prick to people until he eventually dies in an orc attack, and it's ambiguous.
Isn't that the point of being an inquisitor?
Yeah, to die in an orc attack.
No, to be a dick to people until they tell you the truth.
And it's ambiguous to me whether the Krieg let him die because he like made them remove their masks or not. I think not ultimately, but the book wants there to be ambiguity about it. Anyways.
They might have just been like, fuck this guy. We're not going to kill him, but we don't have to save him.
Yeah. I think that the whole point of the Krieg is that they're loyal and don't actually have feelings other than trying to be loyal. So I think at the end they were trying to save him, but it's hard to be sure. He certainly doesn't. He certainly thinks that they're trying to kill him. But
fuck
then, yeah, he is a prick. He like comes across a wounded Krieg soldier and he keeps trying to pull his mask off, and the medics are like, no, stop that. That's like what's holding his head together. And he's like, nope, take it off. Anyways, let's get to some high points. Okay. You guys go first, because mine's just going to be like the whole fucking book, which is not funny, you know?
All right. The orc stompa. That ruled. And also, I just wanted the orcs to win.
What?
Wow.
Heresy.
Ronald Evil, a bear display for everybody to hear.
Also, I wanted the Tyranids to come in at some point.
There are Tyranids at the very end.
Yeah, there was like some mention of them coming to eat a planet or something, but they didn't do it.
Yeah, because the Krieg stopped them, because they're fucking heroes.
Hey, I actually had a question about something that I forgot until now. So the orcs landed in the Hive City, and they're like, we can't hold back the tide of orcs. Were they like were there more orcs coming from somewhere? I didn't.
Okay,
they now, multiply.
This is a fun fact. The orcs in Warhammer 40K, although they look like fantasy orcs that for some reason have spaceships that exist in the future, are actually a species of fungus and therefore can multiply at incredible rates unless you burn them with flamethrowers. That's also why they're so hard to kill.
The more they just like build up.
That's pretty sweet. Fuck, you should join the orcs. They sound good.
Which is also why at the beginning when they said that they set the orcs against the Tyranids to try and get them to kill each other, but it actually just made them both stronger. It's because the orcs like multiplied a bunch when they're in war, and that just gave more biomass to the Tyranids.
Yeah, and also the orcs, like orcs love fighting, and the more an orc does something that it enjoys, the bigger and stronger and better it gets. So yeah, they just created this weird selective breeding program where both the Tyranids and the orcs got better. Good work, Imperium.
Oops.
I mean, the whole...
It does seem like a good idea.
I mean, I guess it stopped them from having to fight them both for a while, but the end result was bad.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Ronald is just rooting for mankind's extermination at the hands of the green skin.
I didn't say their extermination, but I want him to lose this fight.
Okay, Ronald, do you have
fuck the Kree.
God damn it.
I have conflicted feelings about this, actually, but I think it's mostly good, is that all the focus on, like, basically hand-to-hand combat or, like, hand-weapon combat is just, like, hilarious. Like, you'd think in this day and age, like, you know, thousands of years in the future, they'd just use, like, laser weapons from space on each other, but it's so funny to me every time. They feel their chainswords and shit.
It is kind of strange that they don't just bombard the hive from space.
Right?
Why do you need to set off the nukes? Don't you have spaceships?
You'd lose all of the heavy industry. So, I don't know. It's cooler this way.
Jobs, dude. Do you not care about good Imperial jobs at all?
I can understand at first when you're like, they have a chance of taking it back because they don't want to just blow it all up. But then they like decide to nuke it, and it's like, well, you could have just done this from the planet.
Well, it's even weirder than that, because most of the Imperium does not know that the city has nukes. So after they fail to retake the city, they're just like, well, fuck it. Let's exterminatus the planet.
Yeah, right. And it's like, if you're going to exterminatus the planet, why don't you just take out the one hive?
Like, I don't know, man.
That is one thing I didn't understand throughout the whole book.
Well, I think in the GUI for the exterminatus on the ship, it's just binary. You can't
choose. Yeah, it's just like...
It's just a talk.
Why do we build the weapon this way?
There's no option.
It's 100% or 0%.
So I'm going to hit you guys with a high point, which is that although most of the characters in this are like basically cardboard and just kind of wander around and go like, wow, that's bad or whatever, I thought that Yurtin, for the kind of novel this was a pretty like interesting dude. Where he's got this unbending faith in the Emperor, but the fact that he has this unbending faith means that he keeps making more and more compromises of that faith to sort of further it more. And I don't know, it's weird that a guy who started by like just being abhorring even the idea of having essentially a prosthetic limb ended up doing like some kind of weird eugenics program that's completely against what the Imperium stands for, just because like, you know, that's where he ended up, or that's like what circumstances forced him into, and it turns out that's what he had inside him.
But the Empire itself made that concession in using the Kriegs at all.
Well, yeah, but they apparently they're kind of just everyone's just kind of like trying to turn a blind eye to it, you know. Whereas he had to face it head on.
The orc is.
Well, I mean, he took a freaking Adeptus Mechanicus as like his main advisor, so like as soon as he did that, I mean, it's kind of GG.
Yeah, although, I mean, this book kind of, that's one thing that this book kind of fucks up. The Adeptus Mechanicus probably don't actually worship the same god as the rest of the Empire, but for, like, the sake of convenience, everyone kind of just pretends that they do, because otherwise they'd have to have a war with them, and that's in no one's interest. But in this book, the Greal just keeps going, praise the machine god, and not even bothering to pretend that it's the Emperor.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of confusing, and it's kind of confusing, like, why Yurtin would take him as his main advisor, because like it would make more sense if it one thing that I think that this book desperately needed was like somebody manipulating the Krieg into doing bad things throughout the book for them to get their comeuppance. Like, the only thing that we kind of have is the Inquisition guy, who kind of, you know, he doesn't really manipulate anyone. He just tries to look at their faces and claims that they're committing heresy. But what we needed was the Krieg to be doing bad shit, and that's because they had some bad leader or something for them to turn it around on them. And, like, that's what I kind of thought was happening with Greel. But then it kind of turned out that maybe Greel was just doing what was best, and it was like, maybe he's a good guy. And
yeah, the Krieg do end up winning the war, but there is also this very strange scene where Yurtin turns to him and he's like, hey, you were planning this shit all along. And Greel goes, you very infrequently tell me things you don't already know, or ask me questions you don't already know the answer to. It's like, wait, so was he planning to, like, have Krieg get destroyed in nuclear fire, or what does that even mean? And then it's never revisited.
Yeah. And also, like, what? Yeah, it seemed like Greel was trying to get them to blow up the planet the whole time. And it's like, what is this? What do you gain from this? Except, I guess, maybe the opportunity to create super bio babies or something.
Well, he gets to see some new technology, or some technology he's never seen before, do something. That's enough for a Mechanicus, dude.
I guess
they love that shit. Greel is a really weird character. First off, this is another high point. He's got an amazing voice in the novel, or in the audiobook at least. The narrator does a really good job with him. Oh, but second, cool. He's like got this like thing where, you know how everyone's like, being pragmatic is good, but then if you start actually being like really super pragmatic, you end up doing a lot of stuff that's kind of like what the Nazis did, and everyone's like, ew, that's horrifying. And he's like essentially that pragmatic, to the point where he becomes an intensely sinister figure and has all this horrible shit happens. But it ends up being, I guess, because Warhammer 40K is such a dark world, that he's kind of right, I guess, question mark.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, at the end, it seems like the book is kind of praising what the Krieg do and what they've become. And it's like, I don't really see how Yurtin or Greel are the good guys here. Like, they blew up this planet. And they keep being like, oh, well, look how many lives can still live because of this. And it's like, if they could have lived without you blowing up the planet too.
Yeah, that's the book. I went back and forth on that in my head, because whenever we hear that expressed, it's being expressed by someone. It's never the narrator saying it, you know?
It's true, but I still feel like it's the main thesis of the book.
Yeah, and the fact that there isn't a character in this who goes, you know, it was pretty fucked up to kill like several billion people over what is essentially a religious dispute, you know? Yeah.
Right, and like General Kraus is kind of displayed as a bad guy, even though there's a grudging respect toward him. And it's like, all he really wants to do is not send all of his troops into a meat grinder that is the Imperium army.
Like, yeah.
Pretty reasonable.
And I think this book, I mean, I guess there's like some ambiguity there, which might be what it's going for. It could have tipped it either way by like actually having Krieg be under some kind of threat that the Imperium is protecting it from. But I think the secessionists kind of have a point, even if the novel tries to discount it by making them gross in various ways. Yeah. Anyways, anyone else got a sillier high point? Oh, I have one that was so in such poor taste that I kind of laughed at its audacity. So after the nukes have gone off in the Hive City and saved the planet and all that, there's a character who's still in the Hive City, and she looks around and sees Hiroshima shadows. You know, those things where a person gets incinerated, but some interaction between the blast wave and so on produces a permanent shadow of them on the wall, right?
Yeah.
But it's of orcs. And I'm just like, oh, that's an explicit reference to one of the most shameful things humanity has ever done. But you threw in orcs.
I didn't read that as a joke, personally.
I don't think it's a joke.
It's not a joke, but the fact that it's fucking orcs. Like, they don't give a shit about the orcs.
Yeah. Warhammer exists in this weird place where the novels take it absolutely seriously while you're reading the novel, but everyone who writes the novels and you know, approves the novels, and hopefully everyone who reads them too kind of understands on some level that they're silly, but still, that is some next level shit. Yeah. Anyways, you guys want to get into some low points then?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll go with the first one, which is that this book, especially the present day, is mostly battle scenes, and battle scenes are very hard to write, but still, these ones are mostly not very good. The action is kind of boring and samey. The Stampa showing up is a highlight, but other than that, it's mostly just like, she took aim, she fired, you know, stuff went good, stuff went bad. I don't know if that's exactly like, I don't blame Steve Lyons for that too much, because again, it's a really hard thing to do, but still it is kind of
one thing. I just also felt like there was no tension throughout the battle scenes. Like, I was expecting, like, you know, some turns and, like, you know, heroic moves and things happening in the battle scenes. And for the most part, it's just kind of like, I feel like it's almost narrated with, like, kind of a
detached.
Yeah, like a boring history.
I mean, you know, it's like sort of hard to have heroism with the Kriegs, right? Because they're so anonymous.
Yeah, but we're seeing it from the point of view of a Cadian.
Yeah, and Cadians are all about heroism and stuff. So it's kind of, you know, they have a few things where they're like shouting and like for their fallen general and stuff, but nothing really comes of it either way, you know?
And like, also another thing that, like, to kind of ride on to Lawrence's point, another low point, I think, is that the Krieg just, they're talked to, like, this is a big problem of tell, don't show. They're talked about as like the most badass force there is, like maybe even stronger than the Cadians. And I guess a lot of it is just their devotion, which is shown. But in terms of a fighting force, really all we see them do is try to invade and fucking die.
They die in like, you know, very heroic ways of like, hey, yeah, go charge that tank column. You're on foot. Just slow them down so that we can maybe take them out later. And then the Krieg guy reports back like 5 minutes later, hey, we all died like you said. And then on some level, that's pretty heroic. But on the other hand, you still fucking lost.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like, are they really that effective then? Like, that's at the beginning of the book, we're told like how effective the Krieg are. They're like way better than every other's troop and they'll do whatever is necessary to win. But throughout the whole battle, I mean, throughout the whole book, they just kind of lose the war until they just decide to blow up the city. To me is basically a loss, because like we talked about before, I feel like that could have been achieved without blowing up the planet anyways.
Yeah, the book does not present that as an option, but it really seems like that should be a fucking option.
Right, it really feels like it's like, why wasn't this an option anyways? Like, they could have just launched it.
I mean, that the Krieg were able to hold on as long as they were was in itself a victory, because it was impossible to win with the resources that were there.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but this is a novel, not a historical retelling, you know?
Well, like, I mean, in the novel, it's set up that it was impossible to win.
Well, how's this? There needs to be, like, some kind of preamble where it's just the Krieg kicking ass somewhere.
Exactly, right. And we need an introduction to the Krieg where they fuck some shit up so that we know that told, like, they're badass. Like, we see it. And that makes the stakes a lot higher when they start to lose, because we're like, well, we saw them kicking ass. But in this, we just like, these guys are really awesome, and then they just fucking die, and you're like, were they that great? Like, they don't seem any stronger than the Cadians, really.
The closest you see to them kicking ass is essentially that they dig a trench, and then when the orcs charge it, they shoot the orcs. And, I mean, I don't want to brag too much, but I think anyone in this chat could do that. Maybe we'd have...
Well, I couldn't dig the trench.
Okay, that's fair, but once the trench is dug, I mean, las guns are supposed to be really easy to use. I feel like I could shoot an orc.
Yeah. They are pretty big, and the las guns are supposed to be pretty effective against them.
I want to double back a little bit to Rahul's comment about how hilarious the unarmed combat is. So the Krieg are mostly fighting close up against like 8-foot-tall, heavily muscled, essentially gorilla fungus monsters, and they're using just unpowered knives to do it. As like, what? Give them something better than that.
Yeah. What's the point of this? Like, why are we fighting this way? It's 40K. We have space travel, but we're using knives.
We have space travel. We have psychic powers. We have guns so big they can destroy planets.
We didn't even use knives now.
Yeah. We at least use bayonets. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to double back to a high point I just remembered. So after the battle, right, you know, and everyone's left the planet and all that, and the Krieg colonel is like, he's getting reinforcements and he's delivering an inspiring speech to the reinforcements. And his inspiring speech is just, guys, don't worry, you're going to get to die. And it includes the line that your life, each of your lives will count. And it's like, I mean, it's inspiring for the Krieg because they're, you know, weirdos, but still. It was just so that I think was the book having a little bit of a laugh. And then there's another part where the Krieg are, you know, they're volunteering one guy to stay behind and guard the nukes and set them off if the orcs get in. I don't know, actually know if the Inquisitor knew they were going to set the nukes off or not. He kind of says, protect them by any means necessary. And then there's kind of an implied wink, but it isn't stated. I guess he must have. But anyways, so he's like, okay, we need someone to volunteer to stay behind and die. And all of the Krieg volunteer. And then they start arguing about why they should be chosen for it.
I think they decide on whoever is the guy senior. Who served the longest.
Literally, the senior guy pulls rank on them, and he's like, no, I get to do the suicide mission. And it's not like a heroic, like, no, boys, I'm going to be the one so you all can go home or anything. It's like, no, this is what I want. Fuck you guys.
I get to die. I mean, you're all going to die too, but this death is
different
cooler.
Ways. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I also like that I didn't remember until now? I like the orc choppas. For some reason,
I love how stupid the choppas are, and how much the Cadians were terrified of them. It's just a fucking orc riding a motorcycle.
No, the choppas are the helicopters. I thought.
No, this is fascinating because a choppa is actually an orc blade, but the orcs also do have helicopters called, I believe, helicoptas.
Oh,
spelled the stupidest way.
I read them as helicopters for some reason. I thought they were motorcycles
because one ran into a horse.
There are orcs on motorcycles in this as well. Don't worry. A choppa is specifically an orc cutting blade. Orc things have the dumbest fun. Oh, yeah, there's a scene in this where a guy on a genetically modified super war horse wearing a gas mask, both the horse and the rider, of course, wearing gas masks, gets into a fight with an orc on a motorcycle.
Yeah, the horses are just, I mean, just such a ludicrous touch. Like,
yeah. And they just run into each other, too. He just rams into it.
Like, and thank God for the Mounties.
They're called Death Riders, and they're very cool.
Sure. But I guess the horses are probably as genetically modified as the Krieg.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, Greel was actually using them to perfect whatever the fuck he's doing with the Krieg to make them have so much Krieg.
Yeah.
Because later on, he's like, the principles are the same.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah, and of course the horses, I cannot stress this enough, they wear gas masks, and they have claws, so they can kick you real good. So dumb. But it's also, it's like, it like so much of 40K, it exists in that weird like realm of so dumb but so cool. I know you guys are going to try to say it's not cool. I don't believe you.
No, I agree. I actually love the setting of 40K. As much as I kind of panned this book, I love the setting. I think reading the lore of the stories is really cool. I think a lot of times the stories, like the books themselves, it's like Lauren said, they don't really know how to make characters. And I think a lot of the people who write these are more interested in the lore than they are in the characters. And yeah, that really shines through.
So I have a bit of a different take on the character thing. I think all of that could have been forgiven if the super weapon they found wasn't nukes. It had to be something even cooler than nukes.
Cooler than nukes? What could you mean?
Oh, I don't know. Like maybe a big laser? Oh, fuck yeah. That would have been so cool. I've been like, yeah, this book did it. Like
maybe like a black hole bomb?
Yes, yeah, something like that.
What? Yeah. If
something that like goes back in time and like, I don't know, annihilates the entire galaxy on accident. Like,
oh yeah, that'd be sweet.
What if the super weapon was just the Tyranids and he accidentally unleashed the Tyranids?
Or was it? I really thought that when they found the like, they found an ancient cache of weapons, I thought it was going to be Necrons.
That there is actually, Steve Lyons actually did write a book that's just Krieg versus Necrons. It's supposed to be very cool, but there's no audiobook of it, so I can't do it, which is a bummer. Yeah.
I do love Necrons, so.
Yeah, the Necrons are just, they realized that they translated most of their fantasy races to space, but they hadn't done the undead, so they're like, fuck it, here's a race of undead robot monsters that for some reason all look like skeletons.
Yeah, and they're also like Egyptian, kind of.
Yeah, and the first edition, they basically had no lore at all. They're just like, these guys hate life and no one knows why. And then in subsequent ones, they're like, no, they're space Egyptians, whatever, it's cool.
Yeah. And they also killed a race of gods and enslaved them as Pokemon.
Yeah, after the gods had tricked them and made them into skeletons.
Yeah, I mean, it was only kind of a trick, really. They're kind of idiots for falling for that one.
It was Jintrapment, classic Jintrapment. They're like, hey, we can make it so that you're immortal and immune to all this horrible stuff. And they're like, it sounds cool. And they're like, ah, you're skeletons.
Like, I don't know why we didn't see this coming.
Well, okay, I honestly don't blame them for not thinking, hey, I bet they're going to turn us into a race of living mechanical skeletons. That's a weird twist. They should have anticipated something bad, but that's hard to anticipate. It's like a classic Jin wish again. You can usually guess that something bad's going to happen, but the exact nature of how he's going to fuck you, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
And I want, so does anyone else have any just parting shots on this book?
I think I got off all I wanted to.
Your basic premise was just that you think it's really stupid that they're fighting on the planet instead of just hitting the thing from orbit.
I don't even necessarily mind that. I just wanted some, like, I wanted it to be more interesting. That's all I wanted.
Yeah. Rahul, do you have anything?
Nope. I think I've said it all.
So
Wait. Another good thing, another really good thing that I liked was the squigs. I don't know why.
They're just
squigs like, did it for me.
They're just weird balls of teeth, and sometimes they vomit acid on you. And the Imperial guards, they start off being super scared of them, and eventually by the end, they're just irritated by them.
They just launch them in like trebuchets or something. Like, I'm unclear exactly how the squigs made it there. I was like, are they being launched from something or what? But
Here's a fun fact. The squig are actually the same species as the orcs. They're just a weird byproduct of orcs being there and a different kind of the same fungus. Mm. So, that's how the orcs can conquer a whole planet. They're essentially a self-contained ecosystem of orc rot and squig.
So why don't, how could you even stop orcs? Like,
you got to catch them early and burn their corpses. You burn their corpses when they die, and that stops them from releasing spores to make more orcs.
Okay. Or your exterminatus.
Yeah, that's also a good one. If the orcs had gotten in two hive cities, the exterminatus probably would have been more justified. As it is, it sort of just seemed like the Imperium's like, this is a whole deal. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, it felt like the Imperium was being pretty lazy there.
They might have just straight up not had the resources to do whatever they actually needed to. They only put down like 7,000 Krieg, which weirdly low
it's
number.
It's not a lot. Yeah. They kept talking about it like it was big numbers, and it's like, aren't there like trillions of humans in the 40K universe?
Quadrillions, yeah.
Yeah, like 7,000 is basically nothing.
Especially for a hive city. That weirded me out a little, but on the other hand, I think he was trying to tell a smaller, more human story about people fighting orcs in space with nukes.
Yeah, fair enough.
Anyways, there's one last thing I want to highlight, which is a subplot we have not mentioned at all, which is most of the present stuff is told through the eyes of... We never actually get inside of Krieger's eyes at all. We see Yurt.
Except for Yurt.
Well, yeah, but he's not actually a Death Corps of Krieg because he hasn't been through the whole indoctrination process to make him Death Corps. But anyways... Oh, actually, two things. I need to also talk about why we never got the chairman's name. But anyways, so instead we see them mostly through the eyes of Rennick, who's a Cadian sergeant who's just trying to get her men through. She starts off resentful of the Krieg, but eventually she understands that the reason that they're being sent into all the dangerous stuff instead of the Cadians is that the Krieg are cool dying, and there's always more Krieg, whereas the Cadians are kind of a limited resource because this is after Cadia has fallen, and also they're not cool dying. So the Krieg are kind of sacrificing themselves to save the Cadians. She fights through all of it, manages to survive even the nuke going off, although she does get radiation poisoning. And then her arc ends with her being sent to fight a gene stealer cult and sacrificing herself to save her squad in a way that's very reminiscent of the way the Krieg fight. And I thought that was like, you know, a nice little character moment of just her being inspired to die as the Krieg do. And it also ended with this line that I thought was very moving, and you guys are probably going to laugh at, but I'm going to read it anyways. My life must have been worth something if I was allowed to exchange it for so many others. And I just thought that the whole thing was very cool and well done.
I think that that's a very unhealthy attitude you have, Lawrence.
I don't know, man.
I mean, I'm happy for you that you found meaning in this book, but your life has value outside of saving other people.
Yeah. Anyways. So with that out of the way, the other thing is we never get the chairman's name because people were so angry with him for rebelling against the Empire and for like making Yurtin do what he did, as if Yurtin could have just not done it, but whatever, everyone blames him. So he has been rendered like whatever that old Roman practice was where you like literally remove someone's name from history. So he's never named in the novel because the novel is kind of telling you like a little bit imperial propaganda. And they also at one point comment, well, we don't actually know what he looked like, but just assume he's a great big fatso.
Also, I kind of assume, like, because of the way that they were doing that, that, like, he had more of a role to play, and, like, they kind of played up how much General Krauss did. But I guess I don't know.
Yeah, it's ambiguous whether we're being given an accurate history in this. Although if it's propaganda, it's of the more insidious kind of propaganda that mostly tells a realistic story. It's just tilted in one way, you know?
Yeah.
But they also
made the chairman piss himself while he was dying, and he got killed in the most horrible way.
That was actually, I thought, an insanely cool scene. The way they kill him is they gather up some gas, and then the Kriegers who have snuck into his palace, they're wearing gas masks and they gas him to death. And it's like he's the first person to see what the Krieger going to become because of what he did or what Yurtin does. But, you know, he kind of made it happen too,
I guess. Yeah.
I don't know.
If you victim blame.
He could have just kept sending them like some troops. I don't know. It seems better than what did happen.
Yeah. Or yeah. If you think that the ends justify the means, then yeah.
Yeah, this book, the people in this book certainly do. That's a position that can lead you to some both very good and very bad places, kind of depending on what other, like, where you're operating and what other rules you've got going along with it. How's that?
Fair enough.
Yeah. Which I guess makes it equivalent to basically every other moral schema you could propose.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyways, you guys, enough of this. You guys want to play a game?
Let's play a game.
Okay. Exactly. So this is one I thought of. It may not become recurring. I'm just curious how it plays. But it's a reference to our classic episode, Law Day. And each of us is going to propose a law, and then we're going to have a brief debate on it. And then we're going to vote on whether or not that law should become law. And okay. If you are listening to this, the laws we vote on are, in fact, legally binding to you. So
yep, you got to follow them.
Yep.
All right, I'll go first.
Hit me. That.
You guys ready for mine?
Yeah.
Okay. The Council of Ronald proposes a new law. That law is you can no longer shit sitting down.
Okay.
Are you going to give us a justification, or do we just debate it?
It's immoral. Are you fucking kidding me?
Okay.
Fucking disgusting guy. You shit sitting down right now?
I'm shitting right now, bro.
Are you sitting?
No.
Are you standing?
I'm standing, of course.
Oh, okay.
I'm standing and I'm on a treadmill.
Dude, you were scaring me for a second.
Yeah, I know.
Wait, shitting on a treadmill?
It automatically moves the shit off as you keep going.
So
it's efficiency, baby. It's mechanic is efficiency.
I fully don't understand why it's not already illegal. I mean, it basically is by practice, right?
So are we talking like standing straight, ramrod straight up, or is there some level of squatting?
You can lay down.
Okay, can you? Well, never mind. There's no way you could lay down that is good for shitting.
But, you could be in a hammock.
Oh, the classic hammock and, move. I do enjoy that one. You just cut a little hole in the bottom.
Okay, yeah. But doubling back. So assuming you're pooping standing up instead of laying down, right? Are you allowed to squat down, or do you just have to ramrod straight? It goes where it goes.
I mean, I'm thinking like kind of like a deer. You keep moving while you do it. You know, don't stop like a dog. You just keep running.
Now,
but you know what? I'll leave it as a dealer's choice. You know, you can stop if you want. You can do a little squat, but don't squat too much. If your knees are 90 degrees or more, that counts as a sit.
Okay, now my concern here is just one of sort of cleanliness. Sitting down just kind of reduces the places where your poop gets and makes it easier to deal with the aftermath in a way that I don't know if you fully grappled with the mess that shitting standing up can cause.
Maybe that's what the Emperor wants.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know what? The Emperor needs us to fertilize the ground.
But you could do that by, like, sitting.
Look, cows poop standing. Why isn't it good enough for you?
Yeah, man. You think you're better than cows?
Okay.
Cows, horses, elephants. Deer. Do you like elephants? I like elephants.
Rhinos? Okay. I'll allow you to attach a rotating fan onto your onto your butt backside so that it sprays the shit everywhere like the rhinos do.
How does that make it better?
What is this, like a leaf blower?
Have you not seen a rhino shit?
I have.
Their tails spin like a propeller. Oh, okay.
No, you're thinking of hippo. Or do rhinos do it too?
Guys, maybe I'm thinking of hippo, but I think rhinos do
whatever.
It too.
One of them, yeah. Sprays his shit everywhere with his little tiny little tail. Like,
yeah, it spins around in a propeller.
I love that most of Ronald's like, hey, here's my concession to you, are I can make this worse for you. Okay.
How is that worse? That is badass.
I mean, I could, you know how there are some people who like they can't poop anywhere but home? This would create the opposite problem. The only places I could poop are like outside, far away from people. So they couldn't.
You know what? I think Rahul proposed a great solution, which is the treadmill.
You know? But it's going to come back around.
It falls off at the end, so you just put a little trash bag below.
I guess you and I just have very different poops, but
Ronald's are like rocks. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially like a rock, yes.
It burns a hole in the treadmill. Yeah.
You know what?
Lava rock.
We've debated this for a while, and I don't think it's getting any better, so I guess let's just fucking vote. I'm a nay. Rahul?
I, of course, am an I. Yeah. So, Rahul, you're the tiebreaker.
Oh, I'm the tiebreaker. My God, such bad. Now, here's my question, because I don't think we can pass this law without addressing the obvious problem, which is what about peeing? Because you're going to pee while you poop.
Oh, sorry. You can't. This would preclude you from peeing standing up. You'd have to sit down for that.
What? So, why? So you're just flipping them. And you still haven't given us a good answer for why. You've just said it's disgusting.
Lawrence, think about this. You're still allowed to lay down facing upwards and pee.
That's the worst possible way I can imagine to pee. I'm going to get it all over myself.
It's like giving yourself a golden shower. No one thought of that?
Yeah, dude, it's incredible. This law is not only making things better, it's introducing new ideas. We can't afford not to pass it.
This is what innovation looks like.
Okay,
Ronald, what's your final vote on this one?
I wasn't convinced until the pee thing. You know, I feel like I could unlock shareholder value in the pink market.
That sold you?
That sold me.
All right. So I think we're passing it.
Yep.
God damn it. I'm sorry, listeners. I tried. Okay.
All right. Order. The council calls Lawrence to present his law.
Okay, so my law is pretty simple. I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a story on it. So I don't know if you guys are always having this problem, but I'm tired of sitting down and watching a movie, and then I get to the end and there was no nudity. And I know you're like, well, you can look it up on Mr. Skin, but I mean, I don't always have access to my phone. And sometimes, you know, it's a recent release and Mr. Skin doesn't have an entry for it either way. So I'm going to just propose all movies from here on out have to have nudity. Can be male or female, doesn't matter. They have to be over the age of 18 and consenting, and they have to be paid an extra, I'd say 20% on their salaries or on their pay for the movie to compensate for the nudity. But all movies must have someone naked in them for a period of no less than 30 seconds. And it must be well enough lit that I can see what's going on. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait, even children's movies? Well, under this one, we would just simply stop making children's movies because, I mean, they've got like 100 years of them and they just keep watching Cars 3 over and over. So fuck those nerds.
All right, what about animated movies?
I mean, you can have adult animated movies if you want. I wouldn't recommend it because they warp your sexuality and reduce your sexual potency. But, they'd have to have nudity as well.
Okay. Now, does just ass count?
Ass technically counts, but I think we'd have to impose an additional like tax penalty on the movie where you have to pay an additional 10% of your revenues from the movie in taxes if you only do an ass.
So do you get more if you have a dick on your butt and your front side?
So you're proposing if you're some kind of freak of nature? I mean, no, that would...
We're not passing that kind of value judgment on it, dude.
Yeah,
I suppose in an anime.
Hypothetically, would a person like this make more money?
I think that they would be paid the same rate, but the novelty of getting to see that would probably help the business of the film.
Okay.
Also, listener, if that is your arrangement downstairs, you know what, I thought about it and I shouldn't have been so judgmental. That is unusual though, you gotta give me that.
wait, you're not supposed to have two dicks when coming out of your ass? Shit. Okay, I've got another question.
Mm-hmm.
What if it's just in the background? Does it have to be a main character?
It has to be in focus, but it does not have to be a main character. However, like, the person who is nude does have to be paid like a main cast member rate, you know?
Okay. Like, okay, but what if just like at some point in the movie, there's just like a dude dancing naked in the background and it really has no context within the rest of the film, but it does technically fulfill the legal requirements. How do you feel about that?
I mean, that's fine. You know, I would question like why you're having the naked guy dancing in the background of a saw trap or whatever, but that's up to the producers. They know what they're doing.
Okay.
You know what? I'm imagining how incredible it would be if you're in a Saw movie, right? And like it's the climactic trap where the, you know, the stupid twists are being revealed, and then suddenly in the background there's just a guy can-canning naked. Like across the
frame. I would enjoy that.
Are there restrictions on attractiveness, Lawrence?
No, obviously a movie with an unattractive person is probably going to do less bad, but I'm pretty happy just seeing anyone naked, frankly, as long as I'm not related to them.
Huh.
Well, we're all brothers and sisters on this planet, so...
Oh, well, okay, fine. I don't have any brothers or sisters, so you can see... Whatever, I don't know. Don't put my mom in the movie is kind of what I'm trying to get at.
Ooh, I already cast her.
All right, I have an amendment I'd like to propose to the law.
It has to always be my mother. You know, she actually listens to the podcast now. So, hi, Mom.
Oh,
that's not my amendment.
Insane. What?
Wow. Did she listen to the one where we talked about eating shit through our butts or whatever that was?
I don't know. I also wonder if she listened to the one where we just talked about jerking off on worms for a good 10 minutes.
Why would you even tell her about this podcast? Dude.
Because I was right. Trying to get her to listen to the Adapt or Die ones, which I thought she might like.
Hmm.
And then it veered off into...
And then she was like, I love the jerking off on worms episode. Can I talk to Rahul? Remember when that happened? That was weird.
She's like, there's a sensei on your podcast. Can I talk to your sensei?
Why does she have the weird accent?
Why is she affected? Why is she using martial arts terms?
Is that how you think of yourself? You think of yourself as a sensei?
I'm the sensei, guys. Right, that's my role here.
That's what you guys see me, right?
He thinks of himself specifically as my sensei for some reason. Very
all right, let's vote on Lawrence's movie thing.
Okay,
all right.
I'm I.
All right, I'm nay because he voted against mine.
A lot of horse trading going on here.
You know what? It's fine. If I end up losing this because I stood up valiantly for the principle that it's better to poop sitting down because you get less poop on you, that's okay. Roll.
I vote I, but only because I want to see innovation.
I'm very curious what you mean by nudity innovation.
I feel like that's been around since the film existed, but... I respect the mindset.
You know what? I think that representing a naked person is probably the oldest thing humans have ever done artistically.
That may be true.
Huh.
It's either that or drawings of animals.
All right, order, order, order. We call the Council of Rahul to propose his law.
All right. I've got a two-part law. It gets bundled together because it's passed as part of an omnibus bill.
Wow, you're really being ambitious for your first law.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm nothing if not ambitious.
I like that.
Okay, so first rule is the man or woman who's able to tolerate the greatest volume of steroids is leader.
Of what?
Just the leader.
Of the world?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything. Okay.
How do you determine who can tolerate the most steroids?
Well, what does tolerate mean? There's an entire government structure, and they inject you with, I don't know, they start you off in an ounce, next week is 2 ounces.
An ounce?
And then whoever's, I'm not exactly sure what the units are.
You're using the English measurements on this one?
Surely it's got to be milliliters.
CCs?
I mean, yeah. But no, it's
it doesn't
ounces.
Matter, though. right? Like, that's for the scientists, the science.
Yeah, that's for R&D to figure out.
Yeah, I'm just the law guy.
You're just marketing.
I just went to law school, you know?
I would like to point out that an ounce is about 1/100th of a pound, and starting off with that, no, it's 0.06 of a pound, so I guess 6% of a pound, and starting off with that much steroids sounds wrong to me.
With your expert knowledge,
I mean, I'm not
of 1/100th of a pound.
No, it's 6% of a pound, so it's 6/100ths of a pound. That seems like a lot.
I don't know what that is. I honestly have no idea what 6/100ths of a pound is.
It's an ounce.
Okay, it's 1 ounce is 30 cc's.
I don't know. Whatever.
How much is that?
It doesn't matter. The actual units and numbers, that's irrelevant. All right, I'm just saying that the strongest should be the leader.
Well, okay, now what does tolerate mean? Like, if you, like, haven't died, but you're in a perpetual state of roid rage and utterly sterile and deaf, does that count?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
So our leader is going to be an intensely strong, very angry, sterile person who cannot hear.
I'm thinking like Kyriakos, but like 10 times the amount of steroids.
Wait, you saying that Kyriakos does steroids?
I would
not. No, he's all natural.
Yeah, 100%. Everyone's always like, well, you need steroids to get definition, and Kyriakos does not have definition.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Part one of the omnibus bill.
Okay, that seems part like a big two. Part.
Yeah, you know.
Very intrusive.
Now, actually, I have another question. So does it work that, like, so as you're working your way up through the government, they, you know, give you more and more steroids, and then at a certain point you're just like, nah, I don't want to do anymore, and that's where you stop. So, like, the Secretary of Energy is, like, the guy who did, like, the fifth most steroids or something?
Yeah, that's good. Let's tack that on. Yeah, it's an entire hierarchy.
Of just who did the most steroids. To the point where, like, the county commissioner is just a guy who every year gets, like, I don't know, half an ounce of steroids injected in him.
So,
fuck yeah.
Are there people who have not done steroids, or is it now everyone has to do
it? If you want to be ambitious, if you want to get somewhere, if you want to make something of your life, if you want to walk around with, like, horse legs, you know, and if you want to walk around with blood pressure that's so high, it's like Mount fucking Vesuvius. You know, if you want to be a human being, like, you got to do it.
Okay.
I picture it more of a system like the Chinese dynasties used with their entrance exams, where it's like, you don't have to take them, but if you want a government job, you do.
And the only jobs,
all the good jobs are government.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. All right, what is the second law? You still haven't even got to
it. Yeah, part two of this law. Now, this one's a little contentious, I will admit, but pet dogs, illegal. You can only have robo dogs.
What the fuck?
From now on.
No. Why is that pet part dogs. Of the same law?
Yeah, they seem unrelated at all. And in fact,
unrelated laws get bundled together all the time.
This is a writer on the first one.
You pray that I do not add a third law to this.
You're so confident that everyone wants the first law that you can get
as the writer.
Whatever bullshit on.
Guys, they're going to love this fucking law.
They're going to love it so much that we can put any stupid shit we want.
You know what people love? Love steroids. You know what they hate? Dogs. That's a lie. Yours.
Win-win.
We love you.
All right, well, you know what? I don't really like the robot. So I don't really like the robot dog law.
Dogs, illegal. Yeah, only robo dogs. Because dogs poop everywhere. People don't clean up after them. They bit my friend Lawrence multiple times. That could be Lawrence's fault. I'm not sure. Yeah. And also, they bark like motherfuckers. People don't take care of their dogs. They don't train them. They're all over the place, shitting everywhere, starting fights. From now on, only robo dogs, and they're all controlled by a central authority that doesn't allow barking, doesn't allow pooping, and if you mistreat your robo dog, the authorities will come down on you like the hammer of God.
Wait, so in this scenario, the robo dogs can poop, but are not allowed to do so.
Yes, there's a patch. There's a software patch that specifically disallows the robo dog, which has the machinery to make a poop, to not make a poop.
So does that mean that they eventually die from getting backed up? because they're not allowed to poop.
I'm not sure. You know, I think they're a dual fuel kind of thing. Like you feed them coal or you feed them electricity.
What? So feed if you them fed electricity. Your dog coal,
it's not going to be able to poop.
Can it? Oh, wow. Okay. You know what? I've considered all of the legal ramifications here. I think both laws are very bad, but I think that I can use it for my advantage because I'm going to hack the mainframe that controls all the dogs. Ooh. And make them eat their masters. So, I'm for it. I give it an eye.
Now, just to be clear, not that I'm talking shit on my own law, but I feel like you could pretty easily incentivize normal dogs to do that.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, dogs eat humans all the time.
People are horrible. It's kind of their prime directive, if I understand them correctly.
Sometimes they eat so many they get kuru.
This is all because one time I said I liked a dog in a movie, and now Ronald is constantly on my ass about how he hates dogs and wants to kill them.
I don't want to kill them. I just want to warn you against... You know, I just want to caution you against the idea that a dog will eat you one day.
Yeah, just be
prepared. It's basically all of our fates.
That's all I'm saying. Just be prepared, you know?
Yeah. You know? It's not the worst way to go.
I mean, I'm not saying it's close to it, but it's not the worst.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty terrible.
Well, I'm against both of these laws. The first one seems like a horrible idea that would inevitably result in nuclear war. And the second one, I believe, was created especially just to annoy and upset me.
Yeah, but the first one's so sweet, you gotta vote for it anyway.
No, the first one is also terrible.
What are you talking about? What specifically about the maximum steroid utilization plan?
So you don't think Kyriakos would be a great leader?
Kyriakos might be a great leader, but I don't believe he does steroids. Or certainly not the most steroids of anyone in the world.
If he did, he could tolerate a lot of
them. He'd be a god. More of a god. Sorry.
The round god.
Okay.
Well, all right, Rahul, what do you vote?
I bought enough votes for both of them, so this whole thing is pointless, but yeah, I vote for it.
Oh, okay. So all laws passed today.
So
oh my god.
So if you make a movie, you have to include nudity. You're not allowed to own a dog. You have to go get a rope. Oh, wait. Can I, implant Yorick's brain in a robot body?
Well, here's the thing that you don't understand, Lawrence, that Rahul failed to disclose to us until after we passed the law. Dogs can actually withstand steroids way better than humans. So they're now in control of the government.
So the government is run by roid raging dogs.
This is good.
They don't have time to. They don't have time to be pets anymore.
The system
they gotta
is
do
working.
Like bureaucratic work.
Look, I know the laws didn't make it seem like that would happen, but this is the system, and it's working.
Yeah. Why are you so against the system, Lawrence?
You know, I just think that this is the aside from my law, which will make the world a better, hornier place. It seems like we kind of ushered in a dystopia and have ended humanity today.
Well, yeah, but, you know, humanity had to end. Dogs will do a better job.
Okay. Okay, good. I'm loving this constantly just trolling me by talking about how much we just weird dog shit. It's a fantastic development in this podcast. Although, of course, me complaining about it is just going to make it happen more.
Probably.
Yeah. Anyways, let's do some fucking recommendations and cautions. What do you guys say?
Hell yeah.
Ronald, why don't you go first?
All right. So first off, I've got a recommendation. It's for a book called Children of Time. It's a 2015 novel by Adrian Tchaikovsky. It's basically about in the far future, humans try to do some genetic modification on a species of ape to kind of turn them into an intelligent species. But the experiment goes wrong and they accidentally put it into spiders. And so it kind of follows this species of spiders as they get super intelligent and how their culture develops. And there's some like human subplots too. It's really interesting. I really enjoyed it. I think there's sequels. I haven't read them.
I'm very curious what the accident that results of them putting it in spiders is.
Well, it's on a different planet. And basically somebody sabotages the entire experiment and it kind of blows up and... The nano particle or whatever that they were going to give the apes leaks out of the container and just gets onto the planet, and there's spiders and ants and stuff that it gets into.
Well, that's all well and good, but I prefer the idea as the instructions were written in Sharpie on a blackboard that said, do not inject it to spiders, and then the do not got rubbed off, and he's like, okay, I'll inject it to spiders, whatever.
That would be pretty cool. This is a not a comedic take on the idea of intelligent spiders, which is kind of a bold move. But the spiders are really cool, and just the whole, like, all of their technology and their culture is really interesting. It's just fun to read. I liked it. It's not too long, and it's not too heavy. It's just kind of a fun read. And then cautions. I have one caution. This might surprise you, but Ip Man 4, not my favorites, directed by Wilson Yip. I think it came out in 2019. Now, I'm going to tell you something, and you're going to be like, what the hell? This stars Scott Adkins as the bad guy, which is why I watched it, because I was like, okay, it's Donnie Yen and Scott Adkins. Like, how could this be bad? But it's basically just a remake of Ip Man 2. It's like the same movie, but it has Scott Adkins instead of the British boxer. He is better than the British boxer guy, but he's like the only good part, and his character is still really stupid. Really makes no sense. I don't know why they think that he would be a good villain. He doesn't seem very, he's just like some random army sergeant. So it's like, of course, Ip Man's going to kick his ass. Like, that was never in question. At least in Ip Man 2, he's like a boxing champion. So yeah, just kind of a stupid movie. Really not really worth watching. Bruce Lee's in it for some reason, and then he just kind of disappears. He's at the very beginning, and then he never shows up the rest of the movie, even though you're like, why isn't Bruce Lee doing this instead of old man Ip Man?
Oh, so this movie is like old?
No, sorry, Bruce Lee the character.
Because this is the story, Ip Man is the guy who like trained Bruce Lee, among a bunch of other stuff, and these movies kind of purport to tell the story of his life.
Right. Yeah, it obviously isn't very accurate, but I think broad strokes it's maybe accurate. The fights and stuff are probably pretty made up. But yeah, Bruce Lee, the character, shows up in this movie, kicks someone's ass, and then he's not in it the rest of the movie. And it just kind of leaves you wondering, like, why isn't Bruce Lee helping here? And then the answer is because they wanted to feature Ip Man, and Bruce Lee is undefeatable, because you can't put Bruce Lee in a movie and have him lose in a fight unless you're Quentin Tarantino. And
even then, people shout at you a bunch.
Right. You do it as a joke, and then people get mad. So anyways, this movie sucks. Don't watch it.
Yeah.
It's fine. If you just really want to finish the Ip Man series, like, go for it. But it has Scott Adkins, but I wouldn't recommend it. That's it for me.
I'm going to go next, and this is actually kind of weird, because I'm going to recommend a Scott Adkins film called Avengement. I think it's from like 2019, 2020. The basic plot is that Scott Adkins is an MMA fighter, or actually a boxer, who ends up going to prison, and for some reason, everyone in prison is constantly trying to murder him. So he ends up like becoming kind of like Bronson, where he's just like, he's made his body a weapon. He's incredibly fucked up looking. And then he escapes from prison and goes out and tries to get revenge on people. And like the people he's getting revenge on and how he does it is like, and the movie like has a structure where it shows you like him escaping from prison and kicking ass, and then starts explaining why he's kicking the ass. It's pretty cool. The fights are very good, and there's also a scene where Scott Adkins gets curb stomped. That's really something. So, and also it's fun to hear, have him just play like the sort of lower class, like chav guy. And I think actually use his real accent. Pretty fun. Also, I don't actually know what the word chav is. I think I know what it is, but I'm not 100%. So if it's something horribly offensive, I'm sorry. And my caution is a movie called The Night House. I believe it came out in 2020. Stars Rebecca Hall, and I can't remember that like really sinister looking dude who was also the bad guy in Archive 81. The plot is that her husband just killed herself. He's played by the sinister looking dude. And she's like hanging out in his house or in their house. And, you know, stuff starts happening, and like she starts thinking the house is haunted. And then she discovers that across the lake, there's this weird kind of imperfect that their house is on. There's this weird kind of imperfect copy of her house. And she's like, that's weird. And she's trying to figure out what's going on with that. And it's acting like a horror movie, but it's a horror movie that I didn't find very scary. Although I love Rebecca Hall doing weird, kind of frail brittle performances as women who've had something horrible happen to them. Although, of course, I want her to just have a nice life in real life, but she's good at playing that kind of character and it's fun to watch. But yeah, you know, if you want to watch it, it's fine. It's free on HBO Max. Well, free, you know, whatever. It's on HBO Max. And it's not like terrible, terrible, but I just was not engaged by it and it kind of didn't connect with me or scare me. Although the design of the ultimate thing that is stalking her is kind of pretty cool. Yeah, that's it for me. Rahul?
Okay. I will also second what Ronald said about Children of Time. That was a fun sci-fi book. Had some pretty sweet ideas in it. I have nothing to recommend and nothing to caution otherwise.
Do you have anything to plug?
Yeah.
All right, what do we got here? What do we got tonight,
So there's boys? A BBC story from back in the day. This one was on a Tinder date. I hope I haven't plugged this one before. It's just so good.
You haven't.
Okay. She threw her poo out of her date's toilet window because it wouldn't flush, and it got stuck between two windows. So then she went for it. She tried to get the poo out.
What the fuck?
She got stuck between the two windows.
What the fuck is happening?
The picture is just of this woman upside down in between two windows.
Oh my god, please put this in the Discord so I can see.
Okay.
She was trying to fish the poop out?
Yep.
And that's why she got stuck?
Okay.
Oh my god. That is literally like something from a really crappy rom-com movie.
I know, it's like...
You know, it's like just, something that you're just like, this is
such
so
a ridiculous
stupid.
Story.
Yeah, but then it happened.
That, I can't even believe it. She was a gymnast, so I guess that's why she was flexible enough to make her way down the window situation.
This is absurd. This is,
oh, is
also
it?
This might be the most we've talked about poop on an episode.
No, we had a whole episode where we just talked about whether it would be better. By your suggestion, Lawrence, whether it would be better to eat with your butt or poop out of your mouth.
You know, I legit think we might have talked about poop more on this one.
Well, we should call ourselves the Poop Cast now.
I'm just saying, you open the floodgates.
The Poop Gates.
It's such a ridiculous story. Oh my god.
Okay, I'll have aside from the underneath the summary of 40K, I will have a link to this news story, listener.
I love how the dude, they only interviewed they only got the guy's name, but he goes, he said that, I can read this in a British accent. He said the toilet window opened into a narrow gap separated by another double glazed window. It was into this twilight zone that my date had thrown a poo. It's a great way to say that.
You know, did she think it was going out the window and she didn't realize between two windows?
Yes. And then he went to go find a hammer to smash the window, but then she climbed in.
You know, I don't know. I haven't dated in a long time. I think that really leaving poop in the toilet compared to all of the other stuff that was apparently the option, not that bad.
Yeah, honestly, it's way worse to throw it out into the garden.
The first one, you're just like, I, you know, this is kind of embarrassing. Your toilet's not quite working. You know, I'm sorry, dude. Tell you what, why don't I take, let's go out for coffee, my treat, you know, something like that. Just a little gesture to make up for it. The other stuff, it's like, okay, are you a person or a monkey? Because one of those things throws poop, but the other one doesn't.
Like, honestly, if my date had fucking picked up her poop out of the toilet, I'd be like, we're done. Like,
you know,
wow. Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
You don't pick your poop up out of the toilet?
I mean, it's...
Rahul, yeah, you're disgusting.
I am the...
In the privacy of your own home.
Exactly, right? It's my house.
You
already know my treadmill itch, so.
I do think that it would be a pretty mortifying situation to, like, poop in the toilet that it won't flush on, a first date, especially.
But everything she did after that made the situation infinitely worse.
Well, yeah, that is true. I do think that there are better solutions.
Like, the first thing, there's ways of walking that back. The second thing, the third thing, no, you can't be done. Although I will say, based on this picture, she does appear to have washed her hands before she started climbing. So I guess that's something.
Yeah, because she went out and went to talk to him about what she'd done.
What?
Yeah, yeah. She went out.
Okay, after, if you do that, you can like, never
a hammer or something. And then she went inside and got stuck.
No, no, no. Okay, but after you've thrown the poop out the window, you can just never speak of it again, and you never talk to that dude again, and you go about your life. That's the only.
Yeah, move. I feel like you would just sneak out, and be like family emergency, and then you would leave,
and never then, call them again.
Then you ghost them.
Yeah.
See, what I would do is I would grab the poop and hide it in the house.
As a fun little a game you guys can play. Hey, I hid a fun surprise somewhere in your house. See if you could find it.
It's in the house.
Yeah. Also, yeah, you could do it in that tone of voice as well.
Yeah. I'm watching you. Yeah.
Well, it's watching you. Even more sinister. I'm watching you pretty bad. It's watching you terrifying.
I like how this BBC article has a part where it's like, if this story yanks your chain, you might also like these. And one of the stories is, woman teleported inside toilet. What does that mean?
What the fuck is that? I gotta check.
Another astonishing thing, this somehow ended up on the BBC. Like, this is national or international news that this woman threw poop out of the fucking window.
Can you imagine a reporter asking you about this? And like, I'd just be like, do not fucking talk to me.
How did the reporter find out about it in the first place? Who contacted the media with this story?
Well, the dude. The dude's name is in this, but not her name. So he was down to talk about it.
Yep. But okay, so the dude's like, hey guys, the BBC, you'll never guess what my date did with her poop.
Jesus. I don't know. There are pictures of it, so the fire.
Right, let's go. Call up the local news, boys. We got a story for you guys.
We got a poop flinger.
Class one poop flinger, boys.
They're like, oh god, clear our title page.
did the police get involved?
Breaking news.
I'm sorry, we're getting reports of a breaking news story where there's somebody
like,
put,
yeah,
put
like
there's literal piece of poop.
Six wars going on.
This just in, I'm being told that there's a poop flinger in Bristol.
She's now stuck between the windows. We have a reporter on the site. Let's go to them. Monica?
Monica? Now, ma'am, when you started your day today, did you think you were going to become a poop flinger, or were you already one? Or what's your whole... How does it feel to be in your situation?
Oh, it's such a good story.
I think that this article really reinforces why my lab was necessary.
I guess if you poop standing up and just let it on the floor anyways, there's...
It would how could you stand up and get it between two windows? It just would never happen.
No, you're just like, shit up. You just shit on the floor. It's fine. Don't worry about it, Ronald.
It is a bathroom, for God's sake.
Yeah, we get rid of the stigma
of not shitting on everywhere. The floor.
You know, you could poop into a toilet standing up. I'll bet you could do it.
Yeah, I mean, you could.
Why would you? It's the law now. Oh, you
right.
Don't have
my,
to.
My mistake, guys.
You're the one who voted for this horrible state of affairs.
It's really my bag. I didn't mean to say that.
Anyways, I think we have explored this long enough. So from all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you. Signing off.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Life's gonna get rich. Finger in the bottle. Now feel the head swish. Cross my bare body.